This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Mitch Tyke. Thank you so much for being with us today. Nigeria has had a troubled relationship with democracy since it gained independence in 1960. After years of military rule, civilian government was restored in 1999 under the presidency of Olusegun Obasanjo. Obasanjo led the country till 2007, when, for the first time since independence, power was transferred by election from one civilian regime to the next. Still, the country of nearly 175 million people continues to struggle with corruption and graft in public institutions, ethnic and religious tensions, and shortcomings in education and health care. Nigeria is also one of the youngest countries in the world. 43% of the population is under age 14. Former President Obasanjo now heads a foundation seeking stability and sustainability in Nigeria. He traveled to Milwaukee this week for the second time in an effort to forge a collaborative effort with UW-Milwaukee. And he joins us in the Lake Effect studio to share more. Your Excellency, Chief Obasanjo, welcome to Lake Effect. It's an honor.
Thank you very much. It's always a pleasure to be in this city and to be with UWM.
Let me ask you, how stable do you see the state of democracy in Nigeria?
Well, I would say that after three elections and we have moved from election to regime succession, I believe we are fairly stable. Of course, as is normal in a democracy, the period of election is always a period of activity, and the usual activity, particularly where you have more than two parties, there will be parties coming together and parties not coming together, and that sort of thing. It tends to give people some concern. But I believe for Nigeria, we are in for democracy to be sustained.
Well, and when we look at democracy in Africa from the United States, we inevitably compare it to our own. Is it inappropriate for us to expect democracy in Nigeria and other African states to look just like it does here?
Not really, because there are no two democracies that are exactly the same. There are certain important milestones, if you put it that way, that a democracy must have. There must be periodic election. There must be some form of organization, normally political party, to contest the election. There must be competition of some sort. But there are parliamentary democracies. There are presidential democracies. There are a hybrid of part parliamentary, part presidential. For instance, Nigeria is a presidential democracy. The U.S. is a presidential democracy. But there are qualifications that are different in our two presidential democracies. In our case, anybody who wins the election in our presidential democracy must also win certain percentage of votes cast in a number of states. Now, this is to ensure a widespread of popularity, because it's not enough to say, yes, I got the number. You must be fairly popular across the board. Here you don't have that type of a qualification. But you have another form of qualification which is different from ours, that after the popular vote, you have
the Electoral College.
The Electoral College, which is, so you may win here, for instance, you may win the popular vote and not win the election. Now, that has happened. Whereas in our own case, you may win the popular vote and not have the spread. You can see. And if that happens, of course, you will have to go in again. Now, I think what really matters is that the form or shape and practice of each democracy is accepted by the people. And at the end of the day, when elections take place, it reflects the will of the people. The result or the outcome reflects the will of the people.
Recently, there was news of a letter you wrote this month to the current president of Nigeria, Goodluck Jonathan, warning that the country was in danger of stepping backwards. What was your concern in writing that letter?
Well, it's good governance, pure and simple. When this present dispensation started, we started on the basis of democracy and dividend of democracy to the people, which means good governance, which means enhancing the quality of life of all the people of Nigeria, which means certain malpractices of the past that did not allow people to actually have full dividend of democracy must be eliminated. And that's all my letter of appeal was about.
Do you believe it's too late for Mr. Jonathan to deliver on his promise of good governance? Is his administration flawed?
The title of my letter is Before It Is Too Late. And I sincerely believe that the president can still make amend before it is too late.
Let me ask you about another area that people in the West are often concerned about. How should the West view the threat of international terrorism coming out of places such as Nigeria and Mali and other African states? For example, is Boko Haram a threat beyond Africa?
Well, I went into Boko Haram a little more than 2 years ago. And what I saw then was that Boko Haram could be nipped in the bud as a national, even as a state. You know, we have 36 states. It was mainly localized in one state. Now, at that time, the lawyer of Boko Haram, who acted as proxy for me to be able to reach out to them, told me that the involvement of outsiders in Boko Haram could not be more than 20%. So a stitch in time will have saved 9. About 6 months ago, I spoke to the same man who said, as of today, the foreign involvement or the external involvement is well over 50%. That is making it more difficult even for us to manage. And then, of course, it's also getting more and more externalized. There was a time when members of Boko Haram were being recruited to be trained in Mali. Now, that is a very, very disturbing development. But I still believe that with working with our neighbors, countries that surround us, and working with the region or sub-region of West Africa, and working with countries that have the wherewithal to give us intelligence and help us with intelligence and, if necessary, with materials and equipment, I believe we can still nip under. Of course, dealing with it on the basis of stick and carrot, I believe we can still put the menace of Boko Haram behind us.
So to go back to the previous question, you don't think it's too late in this case either?
Well, again, you see, in all these things, the question of leadership. Now, if the leadership acts as it should act, when it should act, how it should act, I think it may not be too late. But like a bad sow, when you delay, it festers. And when it festers, it becomes more difficult.
The demographics of Nigeria are somewhat different than the United States in one key respect. The average population is much, much younger than in the United States. What is the effect of what seems a little like the baby boom that played out in the United States 50 years ago? What is the opportunity for such a young population that you see?
I think the way it played out here could also be the way it will play out in Nigeria if we handle it correctly. You see, for me, population should not be seen as a liability. It could be a very important asset if, one, it is educated, it is given the right orientation and attitude, it acquires skill, and it goes into employment. Then population could be an asset. Now, it is when population is not educated, it's poorly oriented, and not given the desired and appropriate skill, and does not have employment, then it feeds into the poverty cycle and it's dangerous.
Is there an opportunity with such a young population for it to have an impact on the issue of corruption that again, we in the West view Nigeria often through this lens where we're told corruption is a huge issue? Is there an opportunity with a younger population to use that to end that cycle as well?
Well, when I talk about governance, fighting corruption is an indication of good governance. And corruption and wholesomeness of the society, including eliminating restiveness of the youth, eliminating the danger of explosion that could come from the youth, is part of good governance. And I believe that if good governance will actually take sway, corruption will be grossly minimized. There's no nation in the world that is absolutely free of corruption. But there are many nations in the world where corruption is not a way of life. And what we must strive for is to make sure that corruption is not a way of life in Nigeria. That will happen once those who are caught are dealt with immediately, seriously, and we allow the punishment to be in line with the offense.
What does Nigeria gain from an alliance with a school like the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee?
Well, in every way, education that Nigeria desires, there are many components of that education that a university like the UWM can offer. And what we are saying and what we are here for is how can we work out a partnership that will be mutually beneficial, but where Nigeria will derive a benefit and where a university like UWM will also benefit. I see it as a two-way affair.
Is the hope that Nigerian students might be able to take advantage of the university here and bring back the expertise to Nigeria? Is there also hope that, people from Milwaukee will be on the ground in Nigeria as well, a little of both?
No, it's a question of we have experts here that come to Nigeria. We have we could have exchange of students. We could also have exchange of even experts, because there's no body who knows it all. And if only to interact and see and make the staff of UWM know more about Africa, its culture, its challenges, its aspirations, and can then take advantage of closer relationship with Africa through African universities and UWM, I think we are building relationship. We are building partnership, and we are building the world of cooperation, collaboration, which we need.
Is there something in the legacy of Nelson Mandela to South Africa that Nigeria should look to for its future?
I think we have more or less done what Nelson Mandela did. If you are talking of legacy, we have a civil war. And at the end of our civil war, we said there was no victor, no vanquished. And that is what Nelson Mandela really stood for, forgiveness and forbearance after the apartheid policy. The only difference is that Nelson Mandela as the main victim, the symbol of what I call the atrocities or tyranny of apartheid. He became the president and he showed forgiveness and forbearance. But we did that in our civil war. At the end of it, I said, no victor, no vanquished.
Well, and so let me ask you this important question. How do you see Nigeria's chances of getting out of Group F in next year's World Cup? You're up against Argentina and Iran and Bosnia-Herzegovina. Is there optimism in Nigeria?
Of course. we believe that the taste of the pudding is in the eating. And now this pudding is the one that we will eat. And we are working hard to show the world that in the area of soccer, we have come of age.
Well, Chief Obasanjo, best of luck to you. Best of luck to the Screaming Eagles, correct? Yes. And best of luck in your work. Thank you so much. It's been an honor.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Olusegun Obasanjo served as president of Nigeria from 1999 to 2007. Today, he's founder of a UK-based foundation that bears his name and is aimed at, quote, advancing human security in Africa. He was in Milwaukee this week to continue work on a partnership between UW-Milwaukee and education interests in Nigeria. Another Milwaukee organization has been collaborating to improve health in developing nations for 27 years. We'll learn about it when Lake Effect returns on Milwaukee Public Radio.